I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object, you see a change, but that change is not really a change in the object, but just a change in how you relate to the object in your perspective of the object.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
Now please cross the chair. And you will sit down. Make yourself comfortable. And be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair. Making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back. Nothing is required of you except to observe the materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times. Alright? Hope you find the test a pleasant experience.
Well, Fort Worth, Texas residents expressed outrage last night after a police officer shot and killed Tatiana Jefferson inside her own home. Jefferson's 8-year-old nephew said that he and his aunt were playing video games inside her house around 2:30 a.m. That's when they heard noises outside the house. Officers had responded to a call from a neighbor that Jefferson's door was open. Jefferson's nephew said that she took her handgun and pointed it toward the window before she was shot.
Much like the murder of Botham John by Dallas PD officer Amber Geiger, the fatal police shooting of 28-year-old Fort Worth, Texas resident Tatiana Jefferson has sparked outrage in the Lone Star State that has garnered national attention. Tatiana was babysitting her 8-year-old nephew Zion when she heard noises outside her home during the early morning hours of October 12th, 2019. Likely alarmed by the possibility of an intruder, Tatiana, as per the testimony of her nephew, pulled out a handgun and pointed it at the window. A voice yelled out, "Put your hands up! Show me your hands!" Seconds later, shots were fired. Those were the final moments of Tatiana Jefferson's life before she was terminated from this mortal coil. Fort Worth officer Aaron Dean arrived at Jefferson's home for a police welfare check after a neighbor had called a non-emergency number to report that the front door of Jefferson's home was open. He did not, as far as we know, announce his presence. 2 days after the fatal incident on October 14th, Officer Dean resigned from the Fort Worth Police Department and was arrested on charges of murdering Tatiana Jefferson. Coupled with the murder of Botham John on September 6th, 2018, the deadly shooting of Tatiana Jefferson has raised serious concerns about police misconduct in North Texas and America as a whole. Joining us on this edition of Parallax Views to discuss these matters is Texas-based activist Tiffany Lee Billions of We the People Organize and Billions TV. Tiffany has tirelessly sought to raise awareness of police brutality and misconduct in the Dallas-Fort Worth area by closely following and cataloging multiple cases. She even visited the crime scene of the Botham John murder. In other words, it is my opinion that Tiffany Lee Billions is uniquely qualified to talk about these cases and the issue of police misconduct in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, as with my recent conversation with Barrett Brown, you may think that this is a regional issue, but I urge you to listen to Miss Billions and consider that the policing problems faced by the Dallas-Fort Worth community represent an example of the problems America faces on a national scale. And with that in mind, my conversation with Tiffany Lee Billions. Tiffany Billions, welcome to Parallax Views. How are you doing today?
I'm actually doing awesome, and thank you so much for having me.
So, Tiffany, I wanted to have you on because the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area has been in the news a great deal lately in regards to the issue of police corruption. Especially after Botham Jean, Amber Geiger has just been sentenced to 10 years. And now we also have the murder of Tatiana Jefferson. These are both cases that have taken the nation now by storm, and they're both in that Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area. Before we sort of get into this issue, though, maybe you could tell my listeners a little bit about yourself and what your sort of background is.
Yeah, sure. So I am the founder of We the People Organize. I initially started activism in 2008 with it was the Clinton Allen Foundation, and later was renamed Mothers Against Police Brutality. So when that organization first started, I was one of the leaders of that organization, and actually handled social media for Mothers Against Police Brutality. And so a couple of years later, I formed my own organization, recognizing the police corruption and the cover-ups that occur when someone is murdered. So We the People Organize, we've been around for about 2 years, and we basically focus on cases that that have to do with police brutality. And when I say focus on cases, we might bring in medical experts to look at medical records to see if the story that the police officer is telling or the DA is telling lines up with the body, of the victim. So we do in-depth research, and then we offer our research to the public. We simply hold an unbiased stance when we post information. So that's basically who I am, what I do, in a nutshell.
Well, before we get into the specific cases I mentioned that are in the news lately, when we talk about the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, this seems like an issue that we may need some background on for our listeners, because I don't think this starts with Botham Jean or Tatiana Jefferson. I mean, this has a history in the DFW Metroplex area. If you could talk a little bit about that, this issue of police brutality and police corruption.
Right. So the issue of – let me just say this. The issue of police brutality, you're absolutely correct. It is not a new issue. The DFW area, Dallas-Fort Worth, has always, had a problem with police brutality. And the problem, a couple of years back, maybe a decade or so ago, is that, social media was rarely new, and these murders were not allowed, you know, on, you know, people could, did not have access to them like they have today. So you could, you wouldn't pull up a social media account 10 years ago and see someone being murdered, right? So now all of this, because of social media, the murdering, the injustice is being brought to light. But what we have found historically in the Dallas Police Department and the Fort Worth Police Department, you know, since the inception, would be cover-ups. We find that although, you know, what is it, 12% of the population in Dallas is African-American, but they make up 41% of the murders, of the unarmed, you know, killings that are going on. So there is a large disproportionate number of murders, and people need to be concerned about it. And it needs to be brought to light. Particularly, DFW has a problem with officers, police brutality, and murder. And this includes officers walking into homes that aren't theirs, officers being on the outside of homes and killing the inhabitants, you know, when there has not been a crime committed. And so, you know, we have to remember our constitutional rights. We have a right to be secure in our person. And it looks like the Dallas Police Department, the Fort Worth Police Department are basically infringing upon our constitutional rights. When we can't be secure in our homes and our person.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because there was just a town hall in regards to the shooting of Tatiana Jefferson. And of course, we'll get into that. But the town hall itself was, I mean, it was difficult to watch. I mean, seeing, you know, a town where the powers that be, so to speak, you know, just aren't listening. And the line that was used at that town hall repeatedly was, we don't feel safe. And just the testimonies of everyone involved, it's difficult to stomach at times how bad it appears to be.
Right. And so, it's not just an appearance. It really is bad. Take a look at what happened. We had an officer execute a woman while he was standing on the outside of her home. And then people, you know, during the next town hall meeting, they wanted to talk about it. The thing, you're absolutely correct, was I don't feel safe. We don't feel safe. But you have Mayor Betsy Price, who took it upon herself to have the doors to the town hall meeting locked. She took it upon herself to not have the subject of Tatiana Jefferson a main focal point of the town hall meeting. Instead, she wanted to talk about zoning, right? And there's just been a murder of someone in their home who was doing nothing wrong. And when you look at a town, when you look at a city, and you look at its leadership, you know, if leadership doesn't care, and this is what people are saying, they're crying out. They're saying, hey, I don't feel safe. I need you to care about the fact that I don't feel safe in my home. I need you to care about the fact that these officers have been running rogue and they have been doing this. And then when you take a look at the statistics, you know, since January, there have been 6 unarmed killings of people in Fort Worth. And so Betsy Price and the police commissioner in Fort Worth, they all had knowledge of this. They had knowledge that there was a problem with police brutality and the murder of unarmed people before, months before Tatiana was assassinated, before she was murdered. And then you have a town hall and she wants to not allow anyone to speak on the matter of Tatiana. I mean, people had to come up there and keep pushing the issue. And then she locks the doors because she doesn't want anyone to come in. I mean, we have a serious, serious leadership problem. These people in positions, they're acting as if they answer to no one. We look at Betsy Price's security. I mean, she's paying her security $800,000 a year, but we can't have a citizens review board with subpoena power, full subpoena power in Fort Worth, Texas. I mean, it just doesn't add up. She can't say any more clearer that she doesn't care about the people, and she needs to be unseated. You know, there were people that were there talking about the corruption of the other council members. I mean, something has to be done, and it has to be done immediately, because it's not going to stop with the Tatiana Jefferson.
Well, I was going to say, just to clarify, so you said there's been six incidents since, was it January, or was it, I had heard, I thought it was June, but it was January?
It was since January. Now it was since January. Now, after the council meeting, I actually looked up the statistics, because I heard they kept saying since June, it's been six unarmed. When I looked that up, it said that six unarmed men had been murdered since January. So it's still a problem, regardless of if it was January or June, because the murders have not been investigated. There's nothing more biased than an agency investigating themselves, right? So when a murder occurs, then the police department says, hey, we're going to investigate these murders. And there was an officer involved in the shooting. It's an OIS, or officer involved shooting. Then we need an outside agency to come in and thoroughly investigate the matter. We cannot trust police officers to investigate themselves, not in Fort Worth and not in Dallas.
Well, I want to mention too, these six incidents. Out of those six incidents, from what I heard at the town hall, four of the people that were targeted by police in those incidents were people of color, from the black community.
Right.
And I just think that's it amazes me, because my understanding is that's only 19% of the population in Fort Worth.
Right.
So four out of those six being from, that background, it blows my mind that there are still people in this country who want to act like this is not an issue, or people that want to talk about police brutality is I still hear people say, well, we should talk about it as a class issue. I'm like, no, racism is the issue. And I just wanted to put that out there. And to clarify myself further, I'm not saying the class isn't an issue, but if you're not factoring racism into the problems of police misconduct, that's a mistake in my view.
And I totally agree with you. Racism is the issue. And initially I took a look at everything and I said, you know what? And I was with those people. I was like, this is classism. This is classic classism. It's the rich against the poor. It's the have against the have nots. It's, bureaucracy against, the citizen. And, that can't be the furthest thing from the truth, because we know specifically, and we know by looking at the numbers, that minorities, African Americans specifically, are made targets. They're targeted, in all of these situations. And so, there has been an uprising of the people, outside the city hall, Fort Worth. There were people going live, and people were, standing on the corners voicing their opinions about it, because this is something that hits extremely close to home. Tatiana's nephew was in her home with her, 8-year-old nephew. They were playing video games, just a simple knock on the door, a simple ring of the doorbell could have stopped all of this. Why did this officer feel as though he was validated in going to the back of her premise, of her residence, and murdering her? Why did he knock on the door? Why wasn't common sense used? I'll tell you why. Because the area where Tatiana lived is one of the zip codes that the Fort Worth Police Department rarely investigates if a murder occurs. There are 5 zip codes in Dallas that have the same characteristics. If you get killed in those zip codes, that murder will more than likely not be investigated, because they will rate it a high crime area. Right. And so that officer knew that. He knew that that was a high crime area. That area has been dilapidated, and it is more recently being built up. Right. And so he's aware that that is the south side of Fort Worth, Texas. And he thinks that he's going to get away with murder. And that's exactly why he went into the backyard and he shot through the window. Whether he saw her trying to defend herself or not. He breached her peace. He breached the peace, and he should definitely be held accountable.
Yeah, I've seen some articles mention that Tatiana may have had a gun or may have pointed it. And, you know, I don't really see that detail as mattering much, given everything that has happened in the past few years. I mean, to me, I would be afraid myself.
Right.
It goes back to I don't feel safe. Right. And, you know, the fact that there are cops that will shoot first and ask questions later, that this is almost the protocol, essentially, I can't really blame anyone for being skittish like that.
Absolutely. When you take a look at, you know, Amber Geiger and, you know, her Pinterest account and, you know, her Instagram, you know, her entire Instagram, you know, the attitude of shoot first, ask questions later. There was actually a meme that she put up. You're lucky that I didn't, you know, kill you today. I'm wearing all black. Or, everything was geared against citizens, and it was an attitude of supremacy. It was an attitude of my life matters, yours doesn't, and I'm above the law. I am the law. So when you look at, you know, her Instagram, her text messages, you know, social media, her attitude, she was ready to go in to kill. And that's what her social media presence said. It spoke very loudly. And I believe that these are the attitudes of a lot of officers that are, you know, hired by Dallas Police Department and hired by Fort Worth Police Department. And we have to find a way to actually, you know, determine whether or not these people are fit. I believe they should have to undergo psychological evaluation before they're hired by any police agency. Because if not, you're just hiring people who, you know, they want to kill. They have a fetish for killing. And we cannot allow those types of people to patrol our communities, to interact with our children, to interact with our elderly. We cannot.
Well, the Botham Jean case in particular is really chilling. Amber Geiger, the story is she walked into the wrong apartment. She was trying to go back to her apartment, and she got on the wrong floor, walked into Botham Jean's apartment, thinking it was her own, and Botham Jean, as far as I understand, was eating cookies and ice cream, and she thought it was an intruder, and she shot him. I mean, it blows my mind that, you know, I've seen op-eds saying, we have to find a way to forgive her and this and that. And I'm like, I don't, what about Botham Jean? What about his life? I don't know if you could comment on the Botham Jean case a little bit before we get into Tatiana Jefferson a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. So, major issues with Amber Geiger's story. I personally went down to 1401 Lamar hours after I heard that Botham had been killed, and I videoed the blood drops from the first level to the fourth level and followed them all the way to his doorstep. Before I got to his doorstep, Joshua Brown opened the door, and we greeted each other very quickly, and he actually pointed me to Botham's apartment and said, hey, that's the right apartment. And so Amber Geiger says that she parked on the wrong floor. She sat in the car and talked to her lover for 16 minutes on the wrong floor. Then she comes around and she parks in, she leaves one parking space, comes to another and parks in backwards, gets out of her car, goes to the elevator that has a number 4 to the left, and she proceeds and continues. She misses 16 doors that have 14 in lights, a couple of inches above her head, 14, 78, 14, 84, whatever the numbers were. All right. So she misses 16 points. And then there is a Voss that is usually, seated in the hallway. The Voss is not there. She continues to walk until she gets to Botham's apartment. She steps on the red carpet. Her apartment does not have carpet in front of the door. And she has to feel the difference that she's standing on carpet. She does not care. The district attorney says that there was a strong odor of marijuana coming from the apartment, and that is what caused her to go in. Amber Geiger denies that. But even the Texas State Trooper said that days after, that odor was still there. So Amber Geiger's story does not add up. Amber Geiger lied all the way through the trial, and her attorneys lied, and they covered up because her story does not make sense. It does not add up with the evidence. And so who in their right mind breaks into someone's home, sits down, makes himself a bowl of ice cream and cookies? Who does that? And then when you look at the decor of her apartment and you compare it to both the decor of Botham's apartment, it's totally different. It's totally different decor. And if Amber Geiger could not see, to her left was a light switch. In each apartment, there was a light switch immediately to her left. So why did Amber Geiger go in gunning for Botham? Why did she have that attitude that she just wanted to murder somebody? This is the same attitude that is prevalent in the Dallas Police Department and the Fort Worth Police Department and departments all over the world. And we have to stop this. We have to send a clear message. And that is what I was hoping for with her conviction, that we send a clear message to officers all over the world, all over the nation, that this type of behavior will not be tolerated. We will push for your prosecution to the fullest extent of the law. And so this whole forgiving thing, I was there in court when Brant, Botham's brother, took the stand. And I can tell you for a fact that Botham's mother was shocked. She had no idea that Brant was going to say what he said on the stand. And she was totally shocked. But when the media, when social media started to comment and basically drag 18-year-old Brant, Botham's mother had to stand up and say, hey, you know, forgiveness is for the forgiver. But she said verbally also that she has not reached that point. And what, I personally
what did,
don't
what did he say? For my listeners that may not be fully up to date on the case.
Yeah. So what he said was, I forgive you. I love you. And he basically said that he did not want her to go to prison. And that he asked the judge if he could go give her a hug. So it was, I forgive you. I love you. I don't want you to go to prison. And he, you know, asked Judge Tammy Kemp if he could hug Amber Geiger. And he had to ask twice. The second time he asked, he begged. He said, please, can I go hug her? Because Tammy Kemp did not respond the first time. And if you watch that video of Amber and Brant hugging, you know, for me, you know, it's very disturbing. It's very disturbing for me. It's not, I don't take a stance of forgiveness in situations like this, because if that was a mistake and Amber Geiger was truly sorry, she would have apologized. She would have made amends. She wouldn't have been complicit in the cover up that the Dallas Police Association indulged in with her. She would have been responsible for her actions and we wouldn't have had a trial. She would have took a plea if she was really apologetic. But what did she do? She utilized the system to the fullest extent of the law. And she got basically 5 years for murdering a man.
When you say 5 years, so she's been sentenced to 10 years, but I believe there's a reason you're pointing towards five. If you could explain that to my listeners.
Yeah, so in the state of Texas, when you're sentenced for an aggravated case, murder is considered aggravated. She did have a handgun. You have to serve at least 50% of your sentence before you come up for parole. So if Amber had been given 35 years, she would have had to serve 17 and a half before she came up for parole. She was given 10 years. That means in 2024, she will be eligible for parole. So basically in 60 months, she will come up for parole. You know, her family will write letters to the parole board. Brent might even write a letter to the parole board. We don't know. The video of them hugging and forgiving each other may even be played for the parole board. And so there's a very strong chance that she'll make her very first parole. And so when I say she got 5 years, that's what I mean. It's a very strong chance that if Amber Guyger does not get into any trouble during her 5 year stay at TDC, Texas Department of Corrections, that she will not do any more than 5 years for the murder of Botham John.
You know, I also read that the judge hugged.
Yes.
Did she hug? Okay. I just this kind of behavior from a judge kind of that confuses me. A lot of the stuff in this case just I don't understand it. From the way the Dallas media covered it to the way the police covered it. So if we could get into that a little bit.
Right. So just to back up and talk about Tammy Kemp for a minute. Tammy Kemp is endorsed by the Dallas Police Association. I made that known when I found out that she was going to be the judge over this case. And that was back in October 2018. So we have to understand that even though she, you know, was not allowing some of the objections, you know, from the other side to come through, that she was very diabolical and very methodical in what she was doing. And I have never seen or never heard of a judge coming off the bench to hug anyone or offer them a Bible. And so I do take issue with that. No matter how many excuses Tammy Kemp makes, I believe that her position as a judge was compromised, and her behavior was totally unethical. Now, when we talk about, you know, the Dallas Police Association and the Dallas media, their coverage of this case has been totally biased.
Can I interject real quick too? I wanted to mention. So, there have been protesters asking for, or just demanding, I should say, demanding that Mike Mata, who is the sort of head of the Dallas Police Association, they're saying you got to step down after all this. And he came out just shortly after that and said, no, you know, he defends everything. It blows my mind.
Yeah. So Mike Mata, the president of the Dallas Police Association, we have a problem with him. He has been complicit. He has been a very intricate part of the cover up. He is the president and the sergeant that directed all of the officers on the scene after the murder of Botham John to turn their body cam off. And so he also is seen on the police dash cam video asking Amber to step out of the car and not say anything. He doesn't want her to make a statement. So he's acting as if he's her attorney. He is, you know, he's seen giving her a type of side hug, like it's going to be okay. My God, she just murdered a man. And so we don't have that same compassion for Botham John. He doesn't have that same compassion for Botham John. And then days later, after this information is shown in court, Mike Mata downloads the Signal app. Now, why in the world does the president of the Dallas Police Association need to have his messages encrypted? Why does his text messages need to be encrypted? That is a question that he needs to answer. And we are calling, activists are calling for his resignation. He needs to step down. We're also calling for his investigation. He should be investigated for the things that he's done, that he did on the he and Martin Rivera, the other officer, Amber's lover. They both need to be investigated for what they did on the crime scene, from deletion of text messages to basically interfering with an investigation. It's what they both did, and they need to be investigated for it. And we are calling for the investigation of both of those individuals. We, the People Organized, we filed a complaint with the Ethics Advisory Commission. And so there will be a hearing held pretty soon where both of them will be asked to attend and to answer some questions. So we're serious about getting Mike Mata out of that seat.
And I'm correct about as soon as protesters demanded this. He came out with his, you know, defensiveness and, you know, we handled everything right sort of spiel.
Right. And he always does that. There is never a point where Mike Mata says that he's wrong. When Amber Geiger was finally arrested 72 hours after she murdered Botham John, he took issue with her arrest. He said she should have never been arrested. He said that the city fell under the pressure of the people. He said that her arrest was unethical. And so we have this type of pervasive attitude of entitlement that Mike Mata walks around in. And he feels like he can't be reprimanded. And he feels like he's above the law. And that attitude, it leaks down to the officers. And this explains why there's a culture of cover-ups, there's a culture of brutality, and a culture of murder at Dallas Police Department.
Well, I don't know if there's anything more you want to comment on with regards to how the police have handled this. But if you do, I want to let you make any more comments on that in regards to the case of Botham John. And also, I want to get into the media aspect of this, because I just talked to Barrett Brown, and I know Barrett was very upset with the way the press handled it. And I know you have also been very critical of the press in this regard.
Absolutely. So, yeah, let me touch on how the police handled it a little bit more. I have never seen a crime scene where a perpetrator was allowed to walk back and forth, even in the presence of other officers, and contaminate the crime scene. I've never seen that. And here we had Amber Geiger walking back and forth in and out of Botham's apartment, as Joshua Brown testified after she killed him. And also the other witness would have testified to the same thing as she did, you know, on camera after she uploaded that video of Geiger walking back and forth. You know, we have, you know, she just murdered a man in his own apartment, and the police show up on the scene and they know that that's not her apartment, because she's saying, I thought it was my apartment. But she's never arrested. She's never cuffed. As a matter of fact, she sits in the driver's side of the vehicle that she's placed in. She's not put in the back. So she's given this special preferential treatment. Right. And then when she is finally arrested, she does like what, a 10-minute walkthrough. And the Dallas Police Association, Mike Mata and Texas Rangers escort her to Kaufman County. I mean, my God, you would have thought she was Princess Diana, the way they were acting behind Amber Geiger. And so there are things like this. I mean, so the Dallas Police Association had a hand in helping her move out of her apartment. And when they moved her out of the apartment, no one was supposed to know. But thank God the people on social media that lived in that complex, they took pictures of her moving out of the apartment. They took pictures of these Dallas police officers showing up and putting all of Geiger's things in a white pickup truck and, you know, a couple of vans and pulling off. So their whole thing was to protect Geiger, to protect a murderer. And, you know, that's that blue line that they talk about. They don't want that crossed. And we're here to destroy that blue line. That blue line will no longer exist. Dallas has been the nest of activism, and we're going to continue.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because she was treated with this preferential treatment. And we'll move on to the issue of Dallas press, but I want to point this out first. It's interesting that she is treated with such preferential treatment, but Joshua Brown, who was witness, is now dead. And a lot of people on social media came out and said, oh, it was probably the police that did it. I think your take on it is a little bit different from that, but I also think it's probably the most probable explanation. And just, I mean, at the bottom line is, I don't understand why Joshua Brown wasn't under something like, say, a witness protection program.
Right. So I hold two people responsible for, well, two, an organization and an individual. There are many individuals responsible for Joshua Brown's murder, right? So, you know, when Joshua moved, you know, months after what happened to Botham, months after Botham's murder, he didn't feel safe. He moved. He also messaged me on Facebook regarding the video that I had up. He did not want that video up. And you kind of went back and forth about it. But, you know, when you have a district attorney's office that knows, that is fully aware, because Lee Merritt, the attorney, the civil attorney for both John's family, took to Twitter and basically said, hey, Joshua had told me and also told the district attorney he did not feel safe, that he was not comfortable with testifying. And so you have to question that. Well, if he did feel safe and he wasn't comfortable with testifying, then why did he testify? And then in the next tweet, Lee Merritt says, you know, the district attorney threatened Joshua that if he didn't come back from California to Texas to testify, that he was going to arrest him. And so when we see Joshua Brown take the stand in T-shirts and shorts on, then we understand that he's just gotten off the plane. Now everything makes sense. When we hear Tammy Kemp whisper under her breath, I'm surprised you came, then we know that she was aware that Joshua Brown did not want to testify because he feared for his life. Now, you have a witness, a major witness to a case against a police officer in Dallas saying that he fears for his life, and he's been shot. He was shot in November, in the foot, and a guy that was with him was murdered. And so when he's saying that he fears for his life, and you don't, Dallas Police Department, no agency comes in and offers him witness protection, but they simply threaten him with incarceration if he doesn't risk his life and get on the stand and testify. A lot of people want to talk about, oh, well, Joshua was, you know, into some things that he should not have been into and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so let's say that that's the case. Let's say that Joshua was into, the selling of cannabis or whatever. Okay. The DA, the district attorney's office, was well aware of that. The first question that they asked Joshua when he got on the stand, the prosecution asked him, do you have a criminal record? And Joshua said yes. So they were aware that Joshua had a criminal record. And I guarantee you they were aware of Joshua's current activities. And he said he did not feel safe. And they still forced him to come testify. So it doesn't matter to me who pulled the trigger on Joshua. As far as I'm concerned, the district attorney's office and everybody that knew Joshua didn't feel safe, all the way down to Lee Merritt and other people that knew that he didn't feel safe, they're responsible for the murder of Joshua Brown. Because when they put him on that stand and they allowed other people to see him and say, hey, I know that guy. Since he's in all this hot water with the police, why don't we just come down and execute a hit?
And where did they come down from, out of curiosity? It was from out of state.
Yeah, it was from Louisiana. So they drove, allegedly, 4 hours from Alexandria, Louisiana, to Dallas to rob him. Even that story doesn't make sense. But let's just say that it's plausible. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter who pulled the trigger. Dallas Police Department should have been protecting him until he left Texas. He was their responsibility because he came back to testify on their behalf, and he was simply waiting to fly out to Vegas. And so Dallas Police Department and Lee Merritt and all the other attorneys that were aware that Joshua feared for his life, they're responsible for the murder of Joshua Brown.
Well, as I said, this is someone who made it very clear that he feared for his life, and
right,
he should have been put in a witness protection program. These are massive, at the very least, they're just failures of the institution. And, this sort of leads me into the other institution that's involved in a lot of this, and that's the Dallas Press, who, when I was talking with Barrett about this, he was telling me that there was one reporter who was trying to smear Botham Jean and say, Botham Jean was smoking cannabis and was probably on Adderall. And I'm like, I said to Barrett, I said, well, what does that have to do with anything? What does the cannabis have to do with it? So what if he was on Adderall? It doesn't really matter. I mean, Amber Geiger went in and just shot him. It wasn't her apartment. It amazes me. And I want to talk about the press complicity in this.
Yeah. So, and I never believed, you always hear people talk about the press and how they're bought out by the police, and, you know, the press and, you know, the police agencies are one and the same. And I did not really believe that until this case, until the Botham Giant case, because there will be times when I would send information regarding Amber Geiger to these news outlets. For instance, the fact that she had applied, you know, for the police academy in Fort Worth and had been denied, you know, based on her, you know, small theft. And she admitted to smoking marijuana three times. I released that to an individual in the press back in, what was it, November of 2018, and they refused to publish it. But here we are, 2 days after the murder of Botham John, 2 days after murderer Amber Geiger walks into his apartment and blows him away, here we are talking about marijuana in his apartment. Here we are talking about a police vest in his apartment. I don't know if you remember that, but when this first happened, they were saying, oh, there was a police vest in his apartment and there was marijuana. Well, that police vest turned out to be Geiger's police vest. And so they tried to make it come off as though he was some drug dealer, or that he would. And that was totally furthest from the truth. But when we have Amber Geiger in her own writing saying that she has smoked marijuana three times, and I hand that information over to the press and it is not published, we have no qualms about which side the press is on. We know whose side they're on. And so this is the biased behavior. You know, the press is supposed to be unbiased. They're supposed to report the news as it is, report the facts. And they have become road warriors for the police. They take orders from the police. They pull stories if the police says pull a story. You know, they change facts. You know, nowadays, you know, you have to, when you see a story, you have to go in and screenshot the story, because in about 2 to 3 minutes, or it's going to change. The story will actually change. And it's like, my God, this is horrible. You know, and we can no longer depend on the press. That and the power has now been placed in the hands of the people. The activists have now begun pulling down documents and researching stories and fact checking. As a matter of fact, the activists released Amber Geiger's name before the press even released it, before the Dallas Police Department released it. You know, the local activists here did their research and released all types of documentation. And I was at the lead of that. I was at the head of that, because there is no way that I was going to allow the press to sweep this one under the rug. And I believe that's what they were trying to do.
If we could just give me, what do you think the most egregious thing the press has done in this specific case?
The most egregious thing they've done.
I was just going to say, because Barrett was saying even that, you know, there was discrediting of witnesses, you know, deferential treatment for Mike Motta and the police. So it seems like there's a lot.
Yeah. I think the press, when it comes to attempting to discredit witnesses, I think the press did not support certain witnesses, and those witnesses chose not to show up and testify. I think the press actually, you know, I think discrediting the witnesses, that's a large part of it. But I think the most egregious thing they did is the day that Botham was being buried, they released that story saying that he was a drug user, that he was he was possibly a dope dealer on the day of his funeral. I think that was the most egregious, outlandish, sadistic thing that they could have done. I also think that the press knows more than what they're saying about Mike Motta. They know that he's corrupt and they know that he's crooked. I believe the press knew when Amber Geiger was being driven to Kaufman County. You know, they know all of this, and they're told how to spin the stories, and they do what they're told. And they cover things up. They do it all the time. They did it in the Botham John case multiple times. Whenever I would send information over regarding Amber Geiger, it was totally, and I would send it to 2 to 3 people from the press, and they would totally just ignore it. But let something come out about Botham, then they're on it. They're researching it. They're trying to exploit it. They want to find the negativity in it. It was just awful. It's awful. And we have to slap their hands and let them know that that's not going to be acceptable. We have to call them out.
Well, I want to move on to the Tatiana Jefferson case if we can, but I do want to wrap this up with Botham Jean. First off, I want to say it amazes me that they would come out and say on his funeral, he may have been a drug dealer. Because, my response to that, and I said this to Barrett as well, is I don't – what does that have to do with anything? To me, it has nothing to do with anything. I mean, she right. went into his apartment and shot him. I don't really care what the background was on him
right.
in regards to what she did. But I want to do something real quick here. We've talked about Amber Geiger, and she's taken up all this media attention. Maybe you could tell my listeners who sort of was Botham Jean, because we don't get to hear who this man was that had his life taken from him. I mean, what do we know about him?
Yeah, so when I spoke to Ms. John about her son, I made a post, and we did the red tie, red sweater thing back in 2018. And, we were all wear red, and we were pushing for the indictment of Amber Geiger. And, Miss Botham John came on my page, and she said, if my son were alive today, he would absolutely love you and love what you're doing for the cause and to get this indictment. And she began to talk about what type of person he is. She said he's very loving. He's kind. He never met a person that was a stranger. He was very reserved and conservative. He had lots of friends. And he was just the type of guy that didn't bother anyone. So with that being said, it's just very heartbreaking to hear how he died. It's very heartbreaking. She even shared with me that she said that her son, when he came over here and started going to Harding University, he told her, "Mom, I'm not going to, dress like other, black people dress, like the stereotypical, a thug would be, would dress. I'm going to dress differently because I don't want to be harassed." He told his mother, "I always keep my registration on my car, my insurance up to date, because I don't want any problems with any police officers." He said he didn't want any interactions with police officers. He told his mother this, and here we are, we're here today because he was murdered while not hurting anyone, while minding his business, sitting in his apartment. And this is exactly what he did not want. And she walked in on him and she murdered him. And I'll never forget it. I'll never get over it. I'll never forgive. I will never forgive her for that.
Well, yeah, and I want to note, he was 26 years old. That's pretty young. I mean, he was an accountant, I believe, for PricewaterhouseCoopers. I mean, this was someone who was a part of his community. And the fact that I think that needs to be pointed out. These people are having their lives taken from them, and they need to be remembered, as well as pointing out the, heinousness of the crimes and the fact that, Amber Geiger, people can talk about, we need to forgive all they want. We need to think about Botham Jean. We need to think about him.
Yes, absolutely. His life was cut short. He, you look at the average life expectancy, he probably would have lived to be about 70 years old. And here she is. She slapped on the wrist with 5 years. And just to backtrack a little bit, I spoke with one of Botham's friends who was supposed to meet Botham at a sports bar that night because they were going to watch the game together. And, Botham John's friend, he came out to my Botham John release event. We were releasing red balloons. And he says, I feel so bad because, he texts me And he was ready to go out. And I texted him back and I told him, nah, I'm just going to stay here because it's raining. And he said, and, you know, had I not text back and said, you know, that, you know, I was going to stay, then he wouldn't have been there when she came into his apartment. And I had to tell him, look, guy, you can't blame yourself for that. At the end of the day, she had no right to walk into his apartment and murder him.
Well, you know, this sort of, I think, is a good way to lead into a Tatiana Jefferson. I want to make sure, are we still good on time?
Yes, we're good.
Okay, because I want to dissect this a little bit. And maybe the way we can do this is we sort of got into who Botham was as a person. Something I think, as I said, I think that's very important because I think that gets lost in the shuffle far, far too often. Who was a Tatiana Jefferson? I want to point this out. She was 28.
Yes.
That's another life that is completely stolen.
Right.
And that needs to be pointed out.
Right, absolutely. So she was 28 years old. She was a pre-med graduate of Xavier University in Louisiana. She was an equipment salesperson, a medical equipment salesperson, and she had taken the initiative to save money for medical school. She wanted to go to medical school to be a doctor of some sort, and she didn't want to incur loans. So she had taken this job to, you know, save money to pay for medical school. And while she was doing that, her mother got very, very sick, deathly ill, and her mother is still in the hospital now and will not be attending Tatiana's funeral services. Her mother got very sick, so Tatiana, you know, gave up her place of residence, and decided to move in with her mother over there at 1409 Allen Street, and decided to move in with her mother and, you know, to take care of her mother and her nephew. And so when you ask who is Tatiana, she was an educated, you know, African-American woman who cared and loved for her family. She cared and loved her nephew, and she's no longer with us.
It's difficult. It's sometimes just I don't know how to even talk about it at times. It's very heavy. I wanted to talk a little bit about how did this shooting end up happening? If we could reiterate that maybe a little bit.
Right. So we have a neighbor by the name of James Smith who lives on the same street. Excuse me. Who lives on the same street as Tatiana and her mother. And this neighbor said that he was contacted by his daughter, who told him that the door to the home where Tatiana shared with her mother was ajar, and that it had been ajar for a couple of hours. So the neighbor says that he went over to Tatiana's house and he walked in the yard, saw that the door was open, and he did not enter the premises. He immediately went back to his home and called 311. Now, 311 is a non-emergency number that you can call whenever there's not an emergency, but you just kind of want, you know, the police to check up on some things or do a welfare check. So he called 311, and, you know, the Fort Worth Police Department ends up dispatching a special response team officer, a SWAT officer, to the location for a welfare check. Now, let's look at the attitude and the disposition of this guy, because if you're doing a welfare check, you pull up in front of the house and you go to the front door. You see it's open. You'll probably ring the doorbell or you would announce yourself at the door, Fort Worth Police Department. This guy, he did the exact opposite. Aaron Dean, he actually parked down the street, two houses down. And he approached the residents. Yeah, he looks in the front door. You can see on the body cam. He looks in the front door. He has his partner with him. They go around back. And as they're going around back, there are some cars back there. And he's looking into a window. And all of a sudden, you hear him say, put your hands up. And then less than 0.6 seconds, he shoots. And he kills. He murders Tatiana. On the inside of that home, the nephew, who is 8 years old, says, you know what? Yeah, the door was open because Aunt Tatiana you know, said that she wanted to feel a breeze. Yeah, she, you know, it was kind of cool that night and she was enjoying it. She wanted, you know, a breeze to kind of come through the house. He said, we've been playing video games all night. I think he said, I can't remember which game they were playing. Call of Duty. He said they were playing Call of Duty. They had been playing Call of Duty all night. So, you know, he says, we heard a noise and Aunt Tatiana told me to, you know, be quiet while she listened. And then she got up and went to the window. And then he says that after he went to the window, she went to the window, he heard a loud bang and she fell to the floor. Now, this young man's statement was taken without parental, you know, supervision, without parental authority. And he did say that Tatiana went in her purse and she took out her handgun and pointed it at the window. We have the chief of police of Fort Worth Police Department, Ed Krause, that says, you know what? That statement could be very well true. He says, but Tatiana had the right to point her gun at the window if there was someone messing around in her backyard. And so, you know, she has the right to defend herself. What the officer did not have a right to do was to sneak around her house instead of announcing himself at the front door. And so now there's a life loss. She's no longer with us because of the negligence of former police officer Aaron Dean.
And so I've read that her nephew rather affectionately referred to her as Auntie Tay. And he saw her fall, is what I've read in reports. I mean, this is I hope that child is coping well. I don't know how one could under these circumstances. I mean, the whole thing to me is just, it's grotesque.
It is. And he did admit to seeing her fall when he spoke with the family's civil attorney. He admitted to seeing her fall. And shortly thereafter, the officers came in the house. Now, this he's gonna need some therapy. Because right now, when you ask about him, the family says, you know, someone asked about him at a press conference, how's the little guy doing? And they said, oh, well, he's holding up. He's being really strong. He's helping us through some things. He's telling us, you know, how to breathe and de-stress. And yeah, you know, he may be doing that, but he needs comfort. He's going to need to be able to talk about what happened to somebody, because that's a lot for a young man his age to handle. To see your aunt playing video games with you, and the next moment she's lying on the floor, she's been shot to death. That's the most traumatizing experience anyone could experience. A lot of adults can't handle that.
Well, I pointed
and so
out
he,
because
he is going to definitely
go on. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. He is definitely going to need some help, some counseling.
I mention it because I think people often forget that this is not just, how do I put this? A Tatiana's life was taken, but also in the process, everyone in her family is now affected by that. And just, I really want to drive this point home that when these things happen, it's not simply, you know, the person that is murdered. It's the family, their loved ones, their friends. Everyone is affected. Everyone is devastated. Lives are shattered. And I just, cool. I think that there needs to be more accountability, which sort of leads me into what has been the Fort Worth police response to this. I mean, I've heard reports saying, you know, they're deeply sorry. I've heard Betsy Price said this should have never happened. But what is your take on the response? I think you may have a more critical view.
Yeah, so, you know, they're deeply sorry because it made national news. it should have never happened because it made national news. But the fact of the matter is that it's happened 6 times this year. So what do you mean, Betsy, when you say it should have never happened? I mean, why are you posturing for the media now? Why are you acting concerned and talking about how you had dinner with Tatiana's family now? We don't care. We believe that if you had taken a stance, you know, months ago, years ago, and you had put in some police oversight and you had retrained and you had reiterated with your officers that murder of any type would not be tolerated, then we wouldn't be here today talking about Tatiana's murder. So I don't believe Betsy Price. I believe she's a crook and she needs to step down. I don't believe any of the police officers, because I tell you what, if I'm a police officer and I know another police officer is going out on the job with the intent to kill and that he's trigger happy, I don't care about that blue line and I don't care about getting fired when it comes to lives. I'm going to say something about it. And these officers are not speaking up. They're not holding one another accountable. And they expect us to believe crocodile tears when they cry in public. I don't believe them for a second. I don't believe them for a second until they put measurements in place and until they stop killing and stop with this pervasive attitude of racism in southern sectors and all over the nation. I don't believe them. And I would suggest that no one believe them, and that we demand that they put in some type of oversight. We have to have it. It has to be run by the citizens, and it has to have subpoena power. The officer should not have the right to not give a statement. I mean, you have Aaron Dean. He's refusing to give a statement. He doesn't want to say anything, and he's invoking his Fifth Amendment right. Okay. All right. So he has that Fifth Amendment right. But what rights do Tatiana have? What rights does she have now?
You know, with regards to Aaron Dean, the officer responsible for pulling the trigger, he has been released on bond after being arrested. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so he was given the courtesy of turning himself in at his attorney's office. He turned himself in within hours of a magistrate showing up to arraign him for $250,000, or $200,000, I'm sorry, lower than that, for $200,000. And he bonded out within 45 minutes. So and his bond was paid by the Fort Worth Police Association, just as Amber Geiger's was paid by the Dallas Police Association. So it's the same pattern of, oh my gosh, you're too precious to have to wait in jail like everybody else. You're too precious to have to make that phone call to your family and have them get the money together for your bond. So we're just going to make this easy for you, Mr. Murderous Police Officer. Come in to our office, you know, to the attorney's office, and, you know, we'll have everything set up for you. You'll just do a simple walkthrough and you'll be out on bond on murder for murder charges. And so it is this systematic, oppressive regime. That is what it is. It's making sure that no matter what an officer does, they don't spend any time in jail. And if they do spend, if they are convicted, they're spending, you know, less than 5 years in jail, because we played on the emotions of the people. And this type of thing has to stop. It has to stop. The people have to set a stance and a standard. And it has to stop.
What do you, as a community member and other community members, what would you optimally want changed? Because, you know, people always talk about this. I mean, the excuse making I hear for police in these situations is getting to a point of it's just a travesty. It's grotesque. When I hear people say blue lives matter, I get very aggravated, because people choose to become a cop. You don't choose your skin, though. That's the difference between Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter. The other thing is, you know, people act as if, you know, when a shooting happens and the community gets upset, it's just treated as, oh, they're complaining, or, oh, you know, they're going to riot, or this or that. And to me, it's like no matter what the community does, they're always criticized if they speak out. And I just want to know, what does the community want? Because I want to get that out of the way, since, you know, this isn't like a kill Whitey, kill the cops type thing.
No,
is about wanting oversight. That's my understanding of what you and the community wants. And I'm sorry for ranting a little bit there, rambling.
No, it's okay. And you're perfectly fine, because I agree with you. This is not about killing cops. This is not about us against cops. They're trying to make it about that. And what we're simply saying is that, no, we want community oversight. We want that. We need you, Betsy Price, to let your officers know that if they murder someone, or if they break a law, or they do something unethical, that it will not be tolerated. Set a standard. We also want people that look like us to patrol our communities. Stop putting cops in our communities that are looking for their first kill, because that's what they do. They have police talk, and I know this for a fact. They have police talk about what when they ask Amber Geiger what neighborhood she wanted to be in, she said she wanted to be in the neighborhood with the most activity. Okay. All right. So they're all looking to be in the neighborhood with the most activity. This is when you know that a cop is up to no good. Why are you putting, you know, why do you have 50 Caucasian cops in a predominantly black area? These cops do not identify with the people. They don't know the culture. They become assumptive of some things that are not even happening. And so what we're saying is that you need the number of cops to the area needs to be proportionate and needs to reflect the ethnic makeup of the people in that area. Because we're having a problem. There is a problem when Caucasian officers are put in predominantly black areas. They're doing stop and frisk, illegal pullovers. They're doing all types of things. And we know for a fact that they're placing these areas at times to make quota. Because if they go to a predominantly Caucasian area and do the things that they do in black areas, there is going to be a huge turnout at City Hall. You know, there are going to be complaints, and City Hall doesn't want that. So they tell these officers to go prey on the poor, go get those ticket quotas up, do whatever you have to do. And if someone jumps out of line, then you make sure that you have covered yourself when you do kill them. And we're not tolerating that anymore. We're asking for change. We're demanding it. And if we don't get it, the citizens are going to take it. They're not going to sit and wait around and continue to be murdered and killed. And that's just the bottom line. We're not going to continue to pay officers to kill us. We're not going to continue to pay officers to pay the union who turns around and facilitates their bond whenever they need to get out of jail. Do you realize that the citizens of Dallas actually paid Amber Geiger's bond? They actually paid, the citizens of Fort Worth actually paid Aaron Dean's bond. When Aaron Dean and Amber Geiger make their monthly dues to the Dallas Police Association and Fort Worth Police Association, that is why they are covered. That is why they are covered when it comes to bail. But they can't make their monthly dues if they're not paid by the citizens, if they're not paid from the taxes of the citizens. And so we're no longer going to be used in that way. The citizens will figure out a way. They'll figure out a way, but we're going to demand the changes that I just mentioned. And that is, people in our areas need to look like us if they're going to be in our areas, because we know exactly what the city is doing.
Before we close out, we talked a little bit about that town hall. There were people from all parts of the community that were very upset with the powers that be. There were people from all ethnicities, all genders, and it was hard to watch, because the people like Betsy Price, they were looking at their phones the whole time during that town hall meeting. And it seems like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but it seems like the general attitude in both the Botham John case and the Tatiana Jefferson case is, why are you still angry? That seems to be the attitude of the people in power. Why are you still angry? You got what you wanted. Isn't this enough? Isn't this enough? And it's not enough. It's just not enough, because it's going to keep happening over and over again. It's like it's a nightmare that never ends.
Right, absolutely. And that is the pervasive attitude. It's, why are you so angry? We said we're sorry. Sorry does not bring back anybody. It doesn't, and it doesn't change procedures. You know, did you know that Fort Worth Police Department does not have a non-lethal officer involved shooting protocol? In other words, they're not required to use their taser if it's a non-lethal situation. They have so Dallas does have a non-lethal a protocol, but Fort Worth does not. So they can, in any situation that they feel allegedly threatened or fear for their lives, they can shoot. They're authorized to shoot. And so that shows you just how much Fort Worth Police Association and Fort Worth Police Department care about the citizens of that community. And, in watching that town hall, the thing that stood out the most to me was when the lady said, you know, she lived in, a good area. And, she's a Caucasian lady. And she said, the police, came to my house and they came around the backyard. They didn't come through the front door. She said, but the thing that I was worried about is whether or not they were going to shoot my dog. She said, the people here are worried about whether or not you're going to shoot them. She said, this is sad. It's ridiculousness at the highest level. It's preposterous. It makes no sense. She said, these people are here telling you that they don't feel safe. What do you think is next? And so I am glad to have people of other ethnicities that are seeing and that are recognizing the fact that, hey, this is an issue. No one's making this up. This is happening. And, and people are real, and you don't have a right to just take someone's life. You don't have a right to execute someone because you have on a blue uniform.
Well, and you're right. I want to add something to that, if I could. This isn't just, and it's not simply just the murders. There's other things going on. There's a video you have posted that really bothered me. It was in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area of two cops, and I believe they had a body cam on them. That's how we have the footage. And they were leading a black man around on like a leash or a rope while they were on horseback. And they said in that video, this is going to look so bad. This is going to look so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where are the repercussions for these kind of things? I mean, they're humiliating their citizens. They're treating their citizens like garbage. This is unacceptable.
Right. And in this particular video, the man that they were doing this to, his name is Mr. Neely, and he's mentally ill. And they did not want him standing in front of a specific location. They said he was trespassing. And this is how they dealt with him. They actually put a rope around his neck, and they were seated on horses. And they took this rope, one of the officers, and they led him down the street, by the neck. And they were saying, oh, this is going to look really bad. And it's almost like it was a joke to them. Like, no one would believe me. If I told you this, you would only believe it because you saw it on video. Like, it's out of control. It is out of hand. And the people have stood up and said, enough is enough. Enough is enough. We need change. We demand change, and we want it now.
Well, I have to be honest. My basic opinion on this, when it comes to Betsy Price, and I know I'm an outsider because I'm from Pittsburgh, but I've looked at this stuff, and it's chilling to me, and I think it reflects something we see nationally. I think things are getting worse and worse nationally, and I think looking at Dallas-Fort Worth is important because it seems really bad there. But at the end of the day, when I looked at this, I said, the only way you're going to get the change necessary in these areas, ultimately, you need a complete restructuring and a complete systemic change. And right. I don't know if you agree with this, but people like Betsy Price, all the people in the power positions, they ultimately need to step down. They need to be gone. You need to get new people in there. That's my take. And you need to change the way the police are trained. I mean, there's so much that needs to be changed, and I want to give you the final word on all this.
I totally agree with everything that you just said. I just want to take it a step further. I think that people like Betsy Price and people who have participated in the corruption and violating the rights of citizens should be tried, convicted, and jailed. Because an example has to be made out of them so that we don't continue forward electing leaders who are working against us.
Before you go, I wanted to backtrack on one thing. I wanted to ask you, what has your experience been? You were at the crime scene in the Botham Jean case. What has your experience been investigating this kind of thing? The emotions that go into it. I'm sure being at the crime scene was very heavy. The atmosphere is probably very crushing in a lot of ways. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the effect this has had on you.
Yeah, so, and I don't get to talk about that much, but being at the Botham Jean crime scene had a very, had an extremely heavy impact on me. And it is why I consistently talked about the case and posted about the case for an entire year until it came to trial. There was a feeling of, there was an energy there, a feeling of disbelief, a feeling of why. Questions why, and there was a very heavy feeling there, very heavy, and that feeling has carried me all the way to this point. It carried me all the way to the first day of trial, and I hope that the spirit of Botham Jean can find some rest somewhere. And not to get too religious or anything, but I don't believe that we just cease to exist. I believe that we transform as far as spirits are concerned. And I just want us to do better in treating each other in the right way while we're here, and to pushing for change and pushing for, the right things to be done, pushing for justice. And that's where I am. And I think that that's where I'll always be until my time is up.
Tiffany, I also wanted to ask you about what have activists like yourself come up against due to your dealing with this police corruption? My understanding is that the police don't take too kindly to these things, and that there's incidents of monitoring that have gone on.
Yeah, so really, really quite interesting. The police, you're right, they don't take kindly to, when you're speaking about their wrongdoing. Their goal is really to silence you, and that happened October the 11th. I was actually doing an event. And the event was Ice Cream Cookies and Complaints. And so it was an event where you could actually come down, fill out a complaint if you feel like you've been wronged by a police officer. And we were actually turning those complaints into Dallas Police Department headquarters. Of course, we had, free ice cream and cookies as well. And the ice cream and cookies were symbolic of what Botham Jean was eating in his living room. Fortunately, before I got to the event, someone was able to get there 30 minutes ahead of me and to see that there were police officers on the roof of the building. And they were scoping out the premise where I would be. And actually, there was a heavy police presence up and down the street, police cars going up and down the street. And now this is common for activists here in Dallas. They will take pictures of you. If you're an activist, they'll load you into a database, and they create a profile, a portfolio for you. I've done some events where there were actually snipers on the roof. At some events where, and you're wondering, okay, we're filling out complaints. Why are there snipers on the roof? Why is there a guy on the roof taking pictures of me? Why are there 10 police cars just randomly parked and roaming up and down the street? And so when you take on activism, when you decide that you're going to be the voice of the community and the voice for people who can no longer speak for themselves, This is another aspect of that particular calling, if you will.
And I also wanted to ask you about, with regards to the Dallas Morning News, you've had some issues with Facebook. I think you have the Tiffany Billions profile and then Tiffany Lee Billions. I believe the Tiffany Lee Billions profile was taken down, or you're not able to get into it. Does it? And I understand that this may have something to do with the Dallas Morning News. Maybe you could elaborate.
Yeah. So there was a video that Dallas Morning News had on their page. I downloaded the video, and there was also a picture of Amber Geiger. So I downloaded the video and uploaded it to my page and took the picture of Amber Geiger and put it on my page with my little heading about her going to court on that day. And Dallas Morning News sent me a very, very nasty message telling me that I didn't have a right to use their work. And so they reported this to Facebook. Facebook turned around and blocked me. And then this person, it was actually more than one, because when you do like a copyright complaint, Facebook actually releases that information of whoever did that complaint. So I screenshotted who these people were and researched them, and they're all editors and writers on the Dallas Morning News staff. So then I looked at the video, and then I went to, you know, a couple of other pages, about 10 total. That had the same video. These people had done just like I did. They downloaded the video and uploaded it to their page, but yet their video was allowed to stay. They were not, they were not punished as a result for, using material that Dallas Morning News used. They were not punished for using Amber Geiger's picture. And so, you know, I chronically find myself and habitually find myself on blocks. On 30-day, 45-day, 60-day blocks from Facebook. And usually the media is behind that, Dallas Morning News.
You know, it's interesting because I saw that you referred to on your Facebook page, and I like the way you sort of stuck it to them. Was, in a way you could call the Dallas Morning News the Dallas Morning Noose, N-O-O-S-E, instead.
Yes.
And you know what? I want to say this about the Dallas Morning News. A lot of people want to think that the Dallas Morning News, because they came out and supported Beto O'Rourke, or because they're against Trump, oh, they must be, you know, on the right side of history. Historically, though, they are an extremely they tilt conservative historically. So none of this really surprises me.
Wow. I wasn't surprised. I didn't know that I was making that much of an impact until they reached out to me and sent a very long paragraph about how, you know, I was stealing their content and that I was not to do it again. But meanwhile, you know, like I said, 10 other people did the same thing, and there's no repercussions for them. Obviously, there's some, you know, they don't like my content. They didn't like the fact that I was going after Geiger while they were trying to give her breaks. And when I would send, again, when I would send information to them regarding Geiger, you know, I sent to them the fact that she had smoked marijuana 3 times, you know, while they were trying to bash Botham John, and they refused to publish that. So, they've made very clear who they stand for and who they stand with.
Well, you know, I want to stress for my listeners too, again, and I think you would agree with this. This is I told Barrett, and I want to see if you'd agree. What we see in these cases in Dallas, Fort Worth, Metroplex area are ultimately, this is a microcosm. This is really a national issue at this point.
It is. It's a national issue. There was I can't remember the guy's name, but he got on the national TV, and he called Betsy Price an idiot, a buffoon, for behaving in the manner that she did at the police at the city council meeting, locking the citizens out. Police brutality is a national issue, and it just appears that all of the cases, the prevalent cases, are coming out of Dallas, Texas, and it is because of this southern mentality, the Southern attitude of racism that people have not and will not let go of. They continue to walk in the steps of their forefathers, being racist and treating people unfairly. And it's only being exposed now because of social media. It's being exposed.
I think it's being exposed, and I also think it's showing that, you know, people want to say that places like Dallas are these progressive bastions, but that's not always, things are not always as they appear. There's, we have to hold feet to the fire right. Much more often. And I always like to end each show I do on a positive note. That's very hard to do when we're talking about the subject matter, but if there's any positive note we can end on, I'll give you the floor. And also, if you can, let my listeners know how they can follow your work.
Well, and thank you for that. So I'd like your listeners to know that, the positive note that we can end on today is that, there will always be people out here pushing for justice and pushing for change. They're relentless. They're not going to get tired of doing it. Because they really feel like that's what they're here for. And so as a listener and as someone who, may see someone doing something that they shouldn't in the community, it's okay to step up and say something and to be that voice that the victim doesn't have. It's okay. Just know that, the people are pulling for you. People are pulling for you to do the right thing and to treat people with, just decency, respect, and dignity. And I can be found on Facebook, Tiffany Lee Billions. That's TiffneyEY. TiffN as in Nancy, EY, Billions as in money, BILLIONS. And also can be found on Instagram under Tiffany Lee Billions or Facebook at We the People Organized or Billions TV.
Tiffany Lee Billions, I want to thank you again for coming on Parallax Views.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you found my conversation with Tiffany Lee Billions informative. Actually, I hope it made you angry. I hope it infuriated you. Because the death by cop of citizens like Botham John and Atatanya Jefferson should never have happened, and point towards the need for urgent police reform in America. I don't have much more to say on this edition of Parallax Views. Just what we talked about makes my blood boil. That's all I can say, folks. Please follow Tiffany Lee Billions on social media. And also, if you enjoy my work, please consider supporting me on Patreon. Should be recording a new edition of Parallax Views, the week that was current events program, shortly. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views to Parallax Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. If nothing else, if we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. new forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.